Welcome to the Haunted Hangover Podcast. I'm Louie, and I'm joined by Grimy.
I'm here. It's true. I'm in the room.
You're here. You're here. You're ready to go. Continuing. Continuing on with this. Three films in. I think I'm just, every time we do one of these, I'm going to mention how many movies in we are.
It's just three films.
Have to
Yeah,
do it.
I was telling my mom the other day that we were doing this, because she's not like always listening, and I was like, yeah, so we're watching all the Universal Monster flicks, and she's like, cool, how many did you get in so far? I was like, well, one, kind of, but like, there's two of them, so two, kind of, and now we're on the third one. She's like, oh, shit.
There you go. Three out of the 40-ish.
40-something.
Yeah, like, depending if we skip one or two, but it's about
40. But this one's a big one. This one's a big one, man.
There's no skipping this one. And speaking of which, I remember saying that Dracula was like the grandfather of the Universal Monsters. And I think it's safe to say, not Frankenstein specifically, because like most people know, Frankenstein is the man, not the monster, but Frankenstein's monster to me is the father or dad of the Universal Monsters. Would you agree, Grimy?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree, man. Yeah, it's absolutely like culturally important to horror in general. Like, this is just such a huge film. It was a huge success, you know, it's very, very big commercial success. And I'm going to go out on record to say that, like, if you're going to watch any of these films, let it be this one. And if you can go just a step further, do it during Halloween, because it is like the perfect vibe. Like, don't skip this one ever.
Unskippable. Yeah. That's basically it. Whenever I think of the Universal Monsters, the Frankenstein monster is the first thing that comes to mind, even so than Dracula. If we're being real here, it's like you think of Dracula, obviously, and there's a group of them. In our first episode in this journey, we talked about how, you know, he sets the, I guess, blueprint of what these movies are or what they would become. But I think Frankenstein just solidifies I guess from this movie on, which, funny enough, and when we get into the logistics, was released the same year as Dracula, but just later in the year, where Dracula was earlier, Frankenstein was later. I think from here on out, it was like they had a lot riding on these movies because of its success, because of what it did culturally. And even to this day, you know, when you say Frankenstein, this is this character, this Boris Karloff version, is the first thing to pop into your head. In pop culture, he is, the most important monster of the bunch.
Totally. Like, yeah. And like, people who have never watched this film can quote it.
And there's a lot of people that have not seen it. I'll be honest. Like, yeah. You mm-hmm. you know the characters or character. And it's funny because when you watch when we get deeper into it, when you watch this movie, there's a lot of stuff that is associated with Frankenstein that's not even in this movie, but pops up in the later sequels. Mm-hmm. Really important characters and certain things that happen, where this movie was just like the blueprint for what the overall lore is of Frankenstein and the Frankenstein monster. It's kind of crazy. Like, you forget that. Like, something as simple as Igor. There is no real Igor in this movie. No, he comes much later. There is an Igor. Don't want to get into him just yet, but
right.
He is an Igor. His name is not Igor. It's something else. And that does come into play much later. And, you know, and then obviously the bride is a big one too, which we're not there yet, but we're getting there. We're working our way towards there. You know, most people now, especially in like the horror community and horror world, you always usually see the Frankenstein's monster and the bride hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Especially time of this recording, it's Valentine's Day. You see a lot of Bride of Frankenstein and Frankenstein stuff, and it all comes back to this movie.
Yeah, totally. Right. And I like how majority of it is like wrong. It's kind of like the Harley Quinn and Joker thing. They're like, yeah, you know, I want a Harley Quinn and Joker relationship. Like, bitch, no, you don't. Like, it wasn't what you think it is at all.
Exactly. Because most people haven't seen these movies, dude. That's what's kind of crazy. But again, just everyone knows it, but doesn't know kind of the rules that come into play when it comes to these characters and just kind of where they go plot-wise, movie to movie.
Yeah, and even something as simple as what you started out with, like a lot of people don't realize that the monster's not Frankenstein.
Yeah, but I still say Frankenstein.
So do I. Totally, yeah. When I pick a Frankenstein up, I mean, it just to describe it, it's like, yeah, this is a Frankenstein. So like,
it's Frankenstein. Even Big Frank, like not Big Frank. Yeah, Big Frank, right?
Big Frank, dude.
He's Big Frank. Yeah, yours.
You mean this guy right here?
Mine's is over there. I would have to pull him out of. He's a bunch of stuffs in front of him. Big Frank. Mm-hmm. He's named Big Frank, but technically, what he's based on is just the monster. So everyone knows Frankenstein. And you know what? Let's just dive into.
Let's get it,
Frankenstein.
It's alive.
So Frankenstein was released, like I teased, on November 21st, 1931. Thanksgiving, right around the corner, if you think about it. Like, it was right there. And it is interesting how in this year, like I said, they released one of these movies so early on and then another one so much more later. Like, they just months later, almost a full year later, you know, when you think about it. And I'm pretty sure they were both successful, but Frankenstein was the far superior film. And I think it made more money than Dracula did. Correct.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure it did. I don't remember the numbers off top, but I know that it was bigger.
Yeah, it was a bigger deal. Yeah. And it's one of those movies, I think when they made it, they just, like, they probably didn't know it was going to be a hit, but
probably not.
You know, and another thing I read that I thought was interesting, because when you read the backstory of these movies, and the same goes with Dracula, and we mentioned this in the Dracula episode, there were stage plays of these films that the producer was putting together, but they were financial flops. And that's kind of how they took those screenplays or stage plays and turned them into screenplays to make these movies, which were bigger successes, you know, in the long run. This was directed by James Whale. I believe it's Whale, W-H-A-L-E, like the animal.
Yeah, I think so.
And his name will be popping up several times in the future. This will not be the only time we hear about this guy as a director. He directed one of my favorite movies, which is technically not a Universal monster movie, but I believe Universal's involved in either distribution or they're involved in some sort of way. The Old Dark House, which also stars Boris Karloff as one of the kind of heavies. He's not really a monster in the movie, he's this deformed butler who's evil. I don't know if you've ever heard of that movie, The Old Dark House.
No, I haven't, but I'm picturing like a Lurch, basically, from Addams Family right now.
I'll be honest, you've probably seen pictures images of Boris Karloff from that movie. He's got like this matty hair and like a scar in his face. You know, I'm sure Rob Zombie put him in something quickly.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, you see like a lot of you know, Universal monster stuff in his stuff everywhere. And it was also based on the 1818, many moons ago, novel by Mary Shelley. And like I mentioned, there was a stage play in 1921, and that stage play was written by Peggy Webling and John L. Balderson. butchering names, I'm sure.
That's all right. So I read that this is the first live adaptation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Is that correct? I don't know that to be correct or not.
So I know there's a silent film.
Okay.
That was released, I believe, in the 20s or maybe even earlier. And there are images of this online, but I think it might be lost. I don't think you can watch it. I think it's not like Nosferatu or Phantom of the Opera or Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. That's easy to find. Public domain, you can find it anywhere. I'm pretty sure that it's hard to find. I may be wrong, but I've never seen it, so I'm pretty sure there's no kind of existing version you can watch. There's just images of the movie out there. And I think that was just an adaptation of the Mary Shelley book. And the design of the monster is very different from what we'd all know and love in this movie. It's a very different look. He looks more like a scarecrow. Quick Google search.
Okay.
You'll come across an image of what I'm talking about. Another prominent thing in this movie is the monster makeup was done by Jack Pierce, who is another person we will be hearing about as we continue covering these movies. This guy is infamous for working with Lon Chaney and all the makeup effects and other future Universal Monster movies to come. And I actually, on the book, because I watched this Blu-ray, I have two versions of the movie. I also have my VHS, which we'll talk about later. But I watched this Blu-ray, and there's a special feature on it from, I think, the Laserdisc from the early 90s. And they talk about how Jack Pierce like layered on all this cotton underneath, I guess, his like underneath the brow where the makeup goes over the cotton to kind of have it protrude. And then he used mortician's wax to go over Boris Karloff's eyelids to kind of get him all droopy and sleepy to make him look more like a corpse.
Right.
And I think, dude, whenever you like just read about makeup artists and horror and stuff like that, Jack Pierce is always on the list, like with like the innovator of creating monsters and creating the look of, like, this guy is responsible for creating the look of Frankenstein the way we know him. Like, this guy,
that's insane,
Jack Pierce,
man.
I know.
Like, imagine being the person responsible for all that. Like, such iconic characters. Like, wow, dude. Insane. Yeah.
I think there's like some conflicting reports where I think some people say James Whale told Jack Pierce, like, hey, this is what I want him to look like. And then they say that Jack Pierce kind of created the look himself by adding certain things, because the original version that James Whale wanted to, I guess the way he drew up a sketch or something of the creature was too human, so they wanted him to look more dead, like more like a corpse, or look more like he's built from different body parts and stuff like that. So I think they're both responsible for the look of the character.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
You know?
Yep. And what we got's perfect. So like whether one did it or the other, or both had a say in it, like great.
There's no going back. Every iteration of the Frankenstein monster going forward from this point on, from 1931 on, is influenced by this appearance.
Right.
No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, that's literally what everyone bites off of to create their own version of Frankenstein. The bolts in the neck, even though I heard those are not bolts. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. What exactly are they
supposed to be? In this documentary on the Blu-ray, they've said that this technically, they had Rick Baker, another very big makeup artist in the world of horror and FX guy, American Werewolf in London and stuff like that. And he's pointed out that they're not really bolts, but they're supposed to be like a rod that Frankenstein connects, you know, to get the electricity into his body. So we just
say
bolts, but in reality, it's not. It's
just a whole rod. Huh?
Yeah, it's just throughout the years, it's turned into bolts, which I still think it's bolts. I still say they're bolts. Whatever.
They're bolts. Hell yeah. Well, Big Frank over here doesn't have him. He's got him in his shoulders, so there's a new one.
I know, which was an interesting design to stick the bolts in his shoulders. I always thought that was kind of
bolts in the shoulders,
loopy,
completely weird design, man.
Oh, fix me,
fix me,
fix me.
I'm alive.
I'm alive. Yo, that's our boy, Big Frank. No jokes there. Ride or die, Hell Big yeah. Frank. All right. The film stars Colin Clive as Henry Frankenstein. It was changed from Victor in the novel to Henry in the movie.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of strange because when I went to watch it again, I was like, yeah, it's Victor Frankenstein. But then they said Henry. I was like, wait a minute. Yeah. I don't remember it being like that.
And they named his friend and I don't want to be a little kind of talk about shitty stuff or things I didn't like, but they named his friend, Henry's friend, Victor.
Yeah.
He seems a little tacked on, that character. They just plugged another male lead. Yeah. Like, it's a little weird. Yep. Talk about that later.
Yeah, definitely.
Obviously, we've already mentioned him 50 times. Boris Karloff as the monster. In the opening credits, he's a question mark. The monster portrayed by question mark, which I do like. That's fun.
Was that just to like get the crowd riled up or like what was that? I don't know.
I couldn't find any information on why they did that, but it's funny in the end credits it says Boris Karloff as the monster. Yeah. So, and they did that again in Bride of Frankenstein for the bride.
Really?
Yes. So no when shit. We get to it, you'll notice for the bride, it's a question mark. So I guess it's just like a little gimmick, fun little gimmick of just who's some playing suspense. Because if you think about it, there was no internet, there was no nothing.
Sure, yeah.
You know, there was none of that back in the day. There was no behind the scenes knowledge. So if you were going to see this movie for the first time, you would, and people were freaked out when they saw this monster on the screen for the first time. You read any accounts of the way people reacted, they were terrified of this first image of the Frankenstein monster. You probably are like, who is this with all the makeup? You can't really tell. So I think it's just a product of the time. That's the way I take it, that they just want to keep it a mystery until it was an actor. This wasn't really a monster. I think that's kind of what they were going for with this.
That's really cool, though. I do like that a lot.
I do, too. I feel like I wish some contemporary movies would do that with their, you know, usually now monsters of CGI, but, you know, maybe hide who's playing a certain character until the movie comes out. Like, they're currently making a new Frankenstein movie now. We know who's playing the monster. You know, they're making Guillermo del Toro. And it's like this whole big A-lister thing. So, of course, they want to mention who's playing the monster. But imagine if they would have kept that a secret until the movie's release, or do the best they could. I know it's hard nowadays, but to keep it a secret of who's playing the creature.
Honor of Frankenstein, I think next episode, when you introduce me, just introduce me as question mark.
Hosted by question mark. There you go. Both of us will be question marks, even though everyone knows who's hosting. Wink, wink. We've also got, I think it's pronounced, it's May, M-A-E, right? That's how you say that? May? Because when I think of May, I think of M-A-Y, but...
I would say it's May. Yeah, May Clark.
May Clark as Elizabeth. And then we've got two returning. Two of our boys returning. One of them is more of our boy than the other. But we've got Edward Von Sloan as Dr. Waldman, who played Van Helsing in Dracula. He's back.
Right.
And then our real boy, Dwight Frye.
The real one.
Mm-hmm. Dwight Frye is back. He's going to pop up a bunch.
Yeah.
But Dwight Frye as Fritz, also back from Dracula, he played.
Hell yeah.
Our other boy, Renfield. So all the boys are in this movie. Yeah. I do like how these guys came back. And I wouldn't call the role of Fritz as prominent as Renfield.
Right. No.
But still, it's Dwight Frye. And he kills it as this weird little hunchback with his tiny cane whipping the creature. The guy was just so charismatic. I think I said that in the Dracula episode, that even in this like kind of smaller role, he's just such it's so odd, but it works so well. Like the dude just has this charismatic ability to just be so intriguing when he's on the screen, all weird looking and crazy looking. It works so well, man.
Mm-hmm. And oddly enough, he's again someone's assistant. So like that's
he's always in that role, man. Apparently, you know, while doing a little research for this episode, he did get typecast a lot in these type of roles because he was just so good at them.
Yeah.
You know, there's just makes sense. Actors that they're just co-stars, character actors.
Built for the second character, not the stage.
And unfortunately, you know, it's one of those situations where that's kind of just what he was dealt. And you know, I bet you, mm-hmm. you know, obviously he's not around anymore. He wouldn't realize how much of an impact he had on other characters in horror. In my opinion, a lot of people are trying to mimic just that weird kind of that the way they carry themselves in a movie. And that's what makes him pop whenever he's on screen. You know, I you know, before we go into the plot, I do want to talk about Colin Clive as Henry Frankenstein as well. Another probably between, you know, obviously Boris Karloff is the standout. He is the king of this movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I will say Colin Clive, and he's got a really tragic backstory. The guy was an alcoholic. He died at like 37 years old, had of tuberculosis.
No shit.
Crazy stuff. Yeah. And he comes back later too. Spoiler alert, he comes back. Colin Clive will be in a future installment of one of these movies we cover. Absolutely. But yeah, he had a really kind of, he was drunk on set. They said in other films he worked on, he was just like a raging alcoholic and died super young. And he's, you know, the whole it's alive, you know, and you know, he's, I think the line is something like, you know, everyone wants to be God and I am a God, something. I'm butchering the line, but like, he is really good in this movie. You know, he mm-hmm. honestly carries it when it comes to speaking roles. Similar to Boris Karloff, I'd say in Frankenstein, whenever the monster and Henry and Dwight Fry and Fritz in a way aren't on screen, the movie kind of hits a lull. So they really carry the film.
It. Yeah, it's absolutely. Really them. Yeah. And he plays the character so well, too. Like, you really do feel him, like, slipping, kind of, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, slipping, his mind just, like, going the opposite direction.
He's desperate, but, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yep.
He's desperate to create life. That's all he mm-hmm. wants to do.
Yeah, and, like, when he, like, brings the creature to life, mm-hmm. you know, he just has this like weird shakiness to him. Like, I can't believe I did this. Like, you really truly feel it a lot.
He's a madman. That's basically what it is. And that's so kind of, you know, I feel like even portrayals of, you know, in most movies, it's Victor Frankenstein, but it all goes back to Colin Clive as well, for obvious reasons mm-hmm. of him being kind of the first big mainstream version of this character. But yeah, he's just good. I wanted to just sprinkle a little love on him because I think he, you know, whenever people talk about this movie, I feel like they focus mostly on Boris Karloff and he's really good, you know, and the rest of the cast is solid. But even Edward Von Sloan as Dr. Waldman, I think he was better as Van Helsing. This is kind of a less interesting version of a scientist, or in this case, a professor. So which Van Helsing was too. So I just think Van Helsing is a more iconic role. Even his look in Dracula with the glasses and all that, just he looked cooler in that movie. Whereas in this movie, he's just kind of there. I feel that way about the Victor character, about Dr. Waldman, and about Elizabeth. They're just sort of there. Then you've got a couple of other actors. I didn't write them down in my notes. You got the Burgermeister, and you know, some other people that are just the other human characters that are just there. Then you've got Henry's father, who's like the Baron Frankenstein, and but that's honestly, again, kind of where the movie gets a little quiet, and then it picks back up when these other characters are on screen.
You're inhuman. You're crazy.
Crazy, am I? We'll see whether I'm crazy or not.
So the film follows scientist Henry Frankenstein, who, with the help of his assistant Fritz, gather a bunch of dead bodies who, in the movie, they're criminals and people that were executed. That's
and like freshly buried corpses, pretty much.
And they're using them to piece the body parts together and create life. That's all Henry wants to do. We learn that Henry needs a healthy brain for this creation. So he sends Fritz out to take one from a former teacher of his, Dr. Waldman. In the process, because Fritz is an idiot or some shit, Fritz is a dummy.
He's clumsy.
He's
a ditz.
Yep. He fucks up and drops the healthy brain, taking an abnormal one instead. Abnormal. We've all seen Young Frankenstein, which I watch the old one, I try to separate it from Young Frankenstein because there are so many amazing jokes in Young Frankenstein.
It's so good, so quotable.
Amazing. Now, Henry, he's a massive workaholic. And my dude forgets completely about his fiance, Elizabeth. Completely just no fucks given. Does not care. He just forgets about her and their wedding plans for some reason. Oh, yeah,
pushes that all to the side. The dad is in there like, where the fuck's my son? And they're just like, nah, he's fine. He's just off doing his stuff in his windmill. It's good.
It's cool, whatever. I do find it convenient that this is all happening at the same time. So he's deciding to put this experiment together while planning his wedding, which is in like a week. I do find it, you know, just convenient that it's all happening at the same time. Like, Henry, schedule, buddy. Get married first.
Oh, yeah.
Honeymoon, yep. Then come back and create your monster. Come on, man.
Could you imagine? Like, yeah, you're going to get married pretty soon. What else are you doing? Just putting a dead body together. Several dead bodies together. Yes. No big deal.
You got to put a timeout. Timeout on the wedding plans. Yeah. Got to create this fucking monster over here. I just find that hysterical. I just think that's just so funny. Obviously, in the novel and stuff, there's more exposition and stuff leading to this, so it makes more sense. But you only have hour and 10 minutes to tell this story in the movie, so gotta keep things moving. Everything's happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. Oh, but yeah, Elizabeth's concerned. And she asked for the help of Victor, Henry's friend, who obviously wants to bang Elizabeth as well. I don't know if you caught
that. I did too. I was like, so in the beginning, he's like, I'm very fond of you. And she's like, I wish you weren't. And like, wait a minute. Did he just make a pass at this woman? Like, this is supposed to be Henry's friend? Like, fuck this dude.
Yeah. Very odd. He's like, there's literally an entire scene with her where he's flirting with her. And I'm like,
super Henry, awkward.
This is your boy? What the
fuck? Like, listen, dude. Fuck you, Victor. Get out of here.
He's obviously trying to lay down the pipe on your fiance. And I guess the whole point is that Henry is so caught up in his own shit that he doesn't even realize that his own friend is trying to sleep with his fiance.
Okay. That could be the thing. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that's what they were trying to get across, but it also just comes out like Victor just wants to fucking bang her. That's basically it. He's like, you know, he's just like, hey, you know, you are a very beautiful woman. And we're in this room alone. I'm like, all right, dude. But yes, with the help of Victor and Dr. Waldman, the three of them head to Henry's lab where they witness him create life. It's alive. It's alive. Ha 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 ha. Lightning, lightning. All that iconic stuff we love about this movie.
And also, he's not reanimating, by the way. Like, listen to what we're saying. He's creating life. So this thing never lived before. It is a whole new thing. It's different pieces that have never lived all at one time together like this. So, yeah, he's creating life.
He also never finds out that the brain is abnormal. Unless there's a piece of dialogue I missed. I don't know if you caught it.
Yes, I don't think he's talking to, it's right after
he finds out.
Waiting for him to come out of the room or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he's coming up the stairs and he's sitting there with Waldman, is that what his name is?
Waldman,
so they're sitting there and he's like, so I had him go and I had Fritz go and get the brain from your place or whatever. And he's like, oh, well, the one that he grabbed was abnormal. It was from a murderer. He dropped the other one, was found demolished basically.
Yeah, because he left it on the floor, just broken. Yeah, I don't always miss that exchange. I don't know why. I just didn't. I've seen this movie a bunch
of times.
It's
super quick. Like,
it's really, really fast. I was like, I'm like, does he ever find out that it's not like a healthy brain? Okay, he does.
Right.
Thanks for clarifying, Grimy, because I missed it.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, now alive, the creature is obviously not well mentally. He's basically like a giant child.
Yeah.
He's like a giant toddler. So imagine a two-year-old with the strength of like Shaquille O'Neal. That's like all I'm picturing. It's like this 7-foot-tall, 350-pound dude who could rip your arms off but doesn't realize it can do that. That's what the Frankenstein monster is. He doesn't speak, which that might come to a surprise to some people because he does go on to speak eventually, and we'll get there when we do. He finds small things like sunlight intriguing, which is a great scene. You really feel for the creature. That's a phenomenal scene where I think it's Henry opens up a blind or something in his lab, the
opening of like where he goes in and out of the roof there, like he opens that up and it's just like the sun's peering through and you see him put his hands up towards it, and it's a very important scene, I feel like. It shows his childlike features, I guess, is his mentality a little bit more. And
his hands are out and stuff.
Yeah. I think that's what I love about the character the most, is that, like, so he has the brain of this, you know, this criminal or whatever he was supposed to be, or like a murderer. I can't remember exactly. But, like, you expect him to be crazy, but he's not. He's just a giant child. He's just figuring life out as he's seeing it in front of him. Like, what the hell is going on? It's a little different than what a lot of people might expect to see.
Yeah, and it plays into the future sequels, or at least one of them. That he's still learning. He's still, you know, he's a baby. He's still learning what it is to be alive and to experience the things he's experienced. He's also deathly afraid of fire, which we have to point out. That's a
known trope. Motherfucker.
Fritz does not like the monster. He does not. Fritz hates him. He does not like.
And that's what I think I love most about his character in this film. It's like, Fritz is such an asshole, and he plays it so well, because he's just like, he doesn't have to throw this thing. Well, he has this little, like, I don't know, what do you want to call that? Like a torch, right? So he has this torch, and he just keeps flashing it in front of his face. and the whip. And it's just like torturing him this whole time. And like, he gets his shit taken care of, though, like real quick.
Yes. Yeah. I think Fritz was a little deranged as well. So I think that was kind of the whole point, is like they created this creature and Fritz just wants to torture it. It's like another kid torturing like an animal or something. It's really odd, but works well because it's Dwight Fry. Just all those. It's almost hysterical to watch him trying to whip this creature also running away from it, because he knows if this monster gets its hands on him, it'll fucking kill him.
Yeah.
And it does. So,
dude, furious fuck scene.
Yes, yes, yes. Which we should talk about. They literally, Waldman and Henry are like down in the lab talking and doing stuff. And they
That's when that scene comes out. That's when they finally talk about the thing. And then you hear, so you hear Fritz's screams, and they're like, oh no, we gotta go see what happened to Fritz downstairs. And they hear it run, and they open the door, and Fritz's lifeless body is just hanging there by his neck from like the ceiling. And the monster's just like, what?
It looks like, I'm guessing the monster hung him by the whip.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like in that scene. Yeah, good scene. Great scene. Mm-hmm. And even like just his like piercing, there's like two piercing screams, like, and then you just hear it twice, and then they run up there. Really, really good scene. Listen, Fritz deserved it. He was being a dick. So
he was a dick for sure. Yeah, I was waiting for it.
100%. So yeah, Henry and Dr. Waldman try to sedate the monster after he kills Fritz. In the process, Henry, kind of in a scuffle, passes out from exhaustion, because he's been just working nonstop on this thing. And Dr. Waldman tells him not to worry, go rest up, yada yada, and that he'll destroy the monster. So their intentions are to kill this thing because they can't control it and because it has an abnormal brain. So they just know it's a failure. They have to get rid of it. They just can't keep it around. It's a it's dangerous.
Totally.
Spoiler alert, he fails. And Dr. Waldman is killed by the creature, who also escapes in the process. So the Frankenstein monster is out in the town, which that's never a good thing in these movies. So whenever the creature is out amongst the humans, not good. No. The monster accidentally kills a young girl, which is another iconic scene.
Very iconic.
They're throwing little flowers into this lake.
Dandelions,
there you go. Mm-hmm. And Frankenstein monster doesn't have any more, so he lifts the child up and tosses her into the lake where she drowns. That's literally what happens. Now, reading about this, and I didn't know if you knew this or not, that scene was cut out of the movie because this is a pre-code film, and it was considered, like extremely
violent.
It's like
too much?
Oh. Yeah, because he's killing
this
little girl. Pushing the limit by just tossing someone in water.
I guess I could see that. Like, later on, I wonder how they went about it. They just didn't show it, and, like, you know what happens, though, because later on, the father ends up carrying her. So, like...
Yeah. So, when you watch the movie... Like, so I watched the Blu-ray, and I have seen the VHS tape. When you watch the scene, he's throwing the dandelions into the water with her, right? And it cuts. Now, some of the footage in that scene, the quality of it changes. I don't know if you noticed. I noticed it on the Blu-ray more than the VHS. So the quality changes. And that's because this was completely cut from all versions of the film until the 80s.
Oh, no shit.
Which is kind of wild. So it was
quality dips or anything.
Yeah, it's not, obviously this is an old movie, so it's kind of hard to tell, but you do notice, like, especially on this Blu-ray, you do notice, because the high resolution, you do notice it sort of changed slightly, like it was spliced back into the film. So I'm guessing it just cuts from him throwing the, you know, the dandelions into the water, and then you find out he accidentally killed her later. Which could work, too, in the cut where they leave it up to your imagination how he killed this little girl by accident.
True.
I also think I can't imagine. I've never seen the movie without this scene in it, so I can't imagine it without it. No way. You
not
see that he's innocent and doesn't know what he's doing, and that's why he kills this little girl. He's misunderstood. He doesn't, you know, he wasn't trying to hurt her. He was trying to have fun with her. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yep. No, I do love this scene, though. I love it so much. And I gather a lot of people love the scene as well, including the guys at NECA, because their action figure of Frankenstein actually comes with a couple of dandelions. It's really awesome. So.
Yeah. You got to have the dandelions. You just need it with your Frankenstein figure. But yeah, he kills this little girl, and this triggers the town to form a mob equipped with pitchforks, fire, weapons, to go out and kill the Frankenstein monster. Now, they don't know it's a monster. They just know it's something that was created.
Yeah.
It's just somebody, something that killed this little girl, because the father shows up to the Burgermeister and he's got her lifeless body. And this is where Henry learns that it's his creation that's out and about, because they, you know, he sees that he got, you know, because they know that Waldman was killed, yada yada, and they have to go out there and find him. So Henry sort of leads part of the mob in search of the monster, and this all culminates where the monster's led to an old windmill, and at the windmill, Henry tries to sort of calm him down, try to, you know, this is his dad, but he has no control over this creature. He knows he can't do anything. He's basically
he can't subdue
him. Lost. He's lost. He knows he can't do anything. And what else, there's a little bit of a fight, a scuffle between the two, and the monster is like, fuck you, basically, to Henry. Grabs him, lifts him above his head, and then throws him off of the windmill. Henry hits one of the, like, I don't know what you call them, one of the pillars
propellers.
Or whatever that, propellers of the of the windmill, slides off of it, and then hits the ground. And somehow survives.
Lives. Yeah, that was actually a fairly eerie scene in itself, too. Just like seeing his lifeless body hang off of the one little pillar thing. Like, yeah, I was like, wow. I've seen this movie so many times, and for some reason, I genuinely like kind of forgot that spot. It's been a while since I've watched it. Like, once every Halloween, I try to get it in. So, like, yeah, I was like, wow, that's pretty rad, man. Like,
yeah, it's pretty brutal. You think about like 1931, he gets lifted, thrown, he hits the windmill, and then slides off of it. Like, it's obviously a dummy, but like his body slides. Mm-hmm. His body slides off of it and then falls. Yeah. And then like all the townspeople are like, Henry, are you okay? He just got thrown off of a building. They're like, take him back to his family. And they take him away.
He's fine. Now, so, we can't show this little girl get drowned. We can show this lifeless body hanging, though.
I just think that's why I think the fact that it was a little girl is what makes it edgy the time. I think that's what it is.
I think you're right.
So the townspeople, what do? They light up the windmill, lit up in flames, trapping the creature inside. You know, wood is falling on him, fire is engulfing the entire room he's in, things, rocks, boulders, windmill parts, everything's falling on him. The ceiling collapses, pinning him down, which leads to his death, maybe. Question mark.
Yeah, we're not really sure. It doesn't really, we just assume that it's gone, you know?
We don't know. And the film ends where we catch up really quick with Henry, who's in the bed, surrounded by his family, his father. Mm-hmm. They all love him. Everyone's happy. The creature's dead, or so
we think. They're drinking the grandmother's wine.
The love, marriage, kisses, hugs, the whole shebang. Yep. Can't wait for grandchildren. And that was Frankenstein.
Who are you? I'm Maria. Will you play with me?
Great movie. There's really not much else to say that hasn't already been said about this movie, dude. Listen, everything about this movie, I think when they made Dracula, when we watched Dracula, I said this is like pure gothic, like old school gothic horror. Like, that's what you think of.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And this is basically not, I wouldn't say gothic horror, but more like science fiction lab,
graveyard
heart. Like, you know, like there's like that, those scenes early on. And this is one of the things I love about the movie, just the overall production design of the movie. Obviously, all the graveyards and exterior scenes are indoors. You can tell there's like a matte painting of a sky behind them and these sets built around it. But, you know, something as simple as the scene where, Dwight Fry and where Fritz and Henry are digging up a corpse, it just gives you the vibes of an old Universal like monster movie. Like that's what you think of. They've got this awesome sort of Grim Reaper statue behind them holding a sword. Mm-hmm. Like there's a tree, this old decrepit tree next to them. Just the overall design of everything is just spot on. And then obviously Henry's lab. You think of it like the body being raised up high where the lightning can hit it. And we don't even see a lot of that. A lot of that's left to the imagination. You think about it. You're like, oh, I remember Frankenstein. You see the lightning hitting. You don't really ever really
see
that.
None of that.
No, you see Fritz kind of working and doing stuff. But other than that, you don't really see too much of how. It's not even overly explained how they created this. You know lightning, you know he's smart. But it's not all spelled out for you, and I love that too. And just everything about it, man. The whole movie is just fantastic. Like there's really just there's not much about this movie I don't like. And I've seen it like you. I try to watch it, you know, every now and then. It's not I don't watch these movies as often as I should, but whenever I do watch it, it all comes back to me. I'm like, this is why I love mm-hmm. this movie. You know, and even you know, we said it for Dracula, a perfect Halloween movie. You said you try to watch it every Halloween. It is a probably the perfect movie to watch, and it's a quick watch. This movie's 1 hour and 10 minutes long. It's shorter than Dracula, which is crazy.
It is. Yeah, so. it goes by like even quicker than that too. Like it's just insanely fast, and I think it's because it's enjoyable. Like there's really not too many dull moments. Like he said, there's anytime you see Henry and like the monster's not on the set or whatever, and Henry's there to really carry it, and he does a really good job at it. There's just not a lot of sitting waiting around for the action. Everything's genuinely pretty interesting, to the point where you actually miss some things that are happening. Like some things you just aren't really paying attention to. It goes that quickly.
Yeah, and one thing we kind of brushed over that I want to kind of loop back around to, because I didn't mention it in the plot description, but I'm wondering if they did this because of audiences and them sort of freaking out at the images of the Frankenstein monster, but there is a like pre-title sequence where
Marge Simpson, when she comes out and says, "Hey kids,
what you're about to watch is terrifying." I'm pretty sure it's Edward Von Sloan too.
Is it him?
Pretty sure.
I wasn't certain.
I think so. Maybe I'm wrong. It does look like him. I think it is him. Where it comes out, there's a curtain and everything, almost like a stage play, and tells the audience, "You've been warned. This might scare you, startle you, yada yada. You've been warned." I love that. Where they had to warn the audience, "You can leave now if you don't think you can handle Frankenstein." And yeah, it's been parodied. It was parodied in the Treehouse of Horror. It was parodied in El Super Bisto, which I covered on the show in the past. So it's just like that scene just shows you, I guess, that people at the time were just freaking out over this movie. Maybe that's why they cut out the little girl drowning. Is there anything else that stands out to you besides like some of the more iconic stuff in this movie? Something that you watching it on this watch just stood out to you that maybe you didn't notice before?
Nothing this watch around. I will say that I feel like it's pretty dark. It's a darker film than I feel like Dracula might have been. Like now Dracula was super dark, don't get me wrong, but like this, I feel like pushed it just a little bit further, which I think helps it a lot. I know you watched it on the Blu-ray and then you've obviously watched it plenty of times on VHS. Did you notice any like real differences there? Cause I've never watched a souped up version of it or nothing. It's always VHS and like super grainy and stuff. So like
these movies are hard, I feel, to remaster. They're so old. The aspect ratio is never widescreen for obvious reasons. So when you watch it on VHS, which we should talk about, this is the 91. This is the same series from the same version of Dracula that I have. It's all part of the same Universal Monster remaster from the early 90s.
Yeah.
And these are the remastered versions. So this VHS... it looks, it's remastered, so it's still like, it's bright.
Still not the original.
It doesn't look that bad. Obviously, it's VHS, so you're going to get that VHS quality. But it looks good. Yeah. It's not as sharp. The only difference between like this Blu-ray that I watch is that maybe the Blu-ray is a little sharper.
Sharper? Okay.
So you can see the imperfections in like the film stock and like where they cut and stuff, whereas the VHS, maybe that's masked a little bit. But it's a pretty bright black and white film. I think the darkest moments are when they're in the lab, when they're in the windmill, when they're in the graveyard.
And like the cemetery and all that. Yeah, I really like those little moments where it's darkest, though. I think those are really cool. And I know I said this on the last, you know, Dracula. I'm pretty sure I said this, where a lot of scenes I feel like get a lot of their help is the sounds. Like it feels like you're watching a like Halloween sound effects CD or like a tape or something, you know? So like when they're in the laboratory and you see him go up, it's just like lightning and thunder just crashing every 10 seconds. Like there's no like relief in between at all. And it's just, you see all this laboratory equipment with all this electricity going through it. And it's just, if you were closing your eyes and just listening to it, it's still like super great to hear. Like,
yeah, yeah. It's
just puts you in that vibe, I guess, of this like Halloween-y kind of sound effects tapes and stuff like that.
Yeah, it leans more into that stuff than I think Dracula did, where, Dracula's more like a sexy movie. And I said that when we covered Dracula. Yeah, it's like a little more... Bela Lugosi, and I want to talk about him a little bit, because this is another fun thing I thought was interesting about this movie, going back to Dracula, because these movies go hand in hand, same year. But when you think of Dracula and you think of Frankenstein, besides the movies being black and white and sharing some of the actors, I think Frankenstein is a better written and directed movie. Not to say that Dracula is not a solid script, but we both agreed that there's parts of Dracula that are a little too quiet, a little too kind of subdued. And whenever Dracula is not on screen, and this movie has that too, but whenever Dracula is not on screen, you don't really care too much about the rest of the characters. Where the Spanish version obviously was flipped, and we thought that it was the other way around. I think with this movie, outside of maybe two or three scenes, when it comes to Henry's family and stuff, it moves a lot faster. And it's a shorter movie, which is kind of crazy. I just think the screenplay is better for Frankenstein. I just think it's a lot more solid. And the direction is a little sharper and a little, I don't know, it just moves faster. It's just a better made movie. Like, I'm assuming these are shot around the same time, so maybe they learned from some of their mistakes with Dracula. Now, I don't know if you,
that could be.
I don't know if you read this, but when they were done with Dracula, they wanted, Bela Lugosi wanted to play Henry Frankenstein.
I did read that.
And back in the day, you know, during these times, they would contract these actors to multi-picture deals. It was like the studio system, 1930, you know, during those days. And they wanted him to play the monster, not Henry. So similar to Dracula, they wanted him to play kind of the main antagonist,
the main
of
monster.
Even though I wouldn't consider the Frankenstein monster an antagonist, he's just misunderstood, like we said. But you know, the main creature, the main bad guy,
the monster,
I guess. Yeah, that's what they are, Universal Monsters. And he didn't want to do it, and it was something he regretted later in life, to the point that he ended up playing the Frankenstein monster in a future installment that I'm sure we'll dive into when we get to it. It's a Frankenstein sequel. He finally got to play it. And I'll say this, his depiction of the character is just not like the way he performed it is not people's favorite versions of the Frankenstein creature compared to Boris Karloff or Glenn Strange, who we haven't even talked about yet. Well, when we get to Glenn Strange, we'll discuss him when the time comes.
Absolutely.
But I just thought that was interesting. It's like they literally were going to port over most of the Dracula cast into Frankenstein, and Bela Lugosi just didn't want to do it. I think that was a smart, you know.
It worked out in their favor, to say the least. Could you imagine? I don't know if I could have taken... Oh, man, how iconic that character is, and just thinking about how different it could have been. No, save it.
when you see Bela Lugosi's version of the creature, of the Frankenstein monster, you'll be like, they made the right choice. That Karloff was, because no one, you know, can ever touch what he did. You know, I think Glenn Strange did a decent job, but Bela Lugosi is not a good, he's a good Dracula, not a good Frankenstein's monster. So I don't think the movie would have been as, I don't think the character would have been as iconic if he played both of them. You know, he did for Dracula, making that like the Dracula, that is what people think of Dracula when they think of the character. I don't think I don't think that would have been carried over to the Frankenstein monster. I think it would have been...
No.
It's just, I don't think he's that type of actor. That's just not what, especially when you watch other stuff Bela Lugosi was in, and I like Bela Lugosi, and he'll be popping up several times. I just don't think that's what he, I don't think that he would have been good for the role. you know.
No.
Just knowing what I know from other movies I've seen. So I just think that's an interesting tidbit of information when it comes to kind of the behind the scenes of this movie. Is there anything else that stood out to you? Anything that you thought was good or funny? Or
other than that, I think we covered it, man.
There's one little thing I wanted to point out that I thought was kind of crazy, and it shows you how different filmmaking was back in the day. Hmm. So when they're in the laboratory, right? Dwight fries Fritz, and he's at the top, like the top of the lab area where, like, I guess the lightning hits, like the exterior part. Yo, he climbed down that rope. It was him. Like, nowadays, that would be a stunt. Like, when you look at the scene, it's him.
Yeah.
So he actually, I was like, there's no way in hell I'm climbing down that. Like, nothing about that looks safe. And I'm 99% sure it was him. Like, you see
just
him.
Just all him.
Because, you know, this is when it was the Wild West. There was no, like, laws against, like, stuff like that. So you literally see him climb down with the hunchback and all that, get beat up by Henry, because Henry does kind of, you know, push him and stuff. It's his assistant. It's his Igor. And then it just continued the scene. I was like, oh, shit, he actually did that shit. You know?
That's unreal.
And I also think, like, the whole, and there's no, like, yes, master. There's none of that. Fritz, I don't think.
No, yeah, you really don't hear any speaking lines from him, like, at all.
He talks, but it's more just kind of, like, a little bit here and there. It's more in the face. Yeah. But I also think he is the precursor to the Igor character, which we mentioned Bela Lugosi. He will go. Yeah. He goes on to play eventually. So I do think that's kind of crazy that Dwight Fry, you know, you think of Frankenstein, you think of the creature, you think of Igor, you think of the doctor, you think of Victor, and all those, even Dwight Fry was kind of responsible for, like, that iteration of the hunchback assistant, you know?
Yeah.
And we already gushed about him, so I won't continue repeating myself here. Also, that windmill scene, man, every time I see it, I'm like, yo, this is, like, the most probably iconic thing. When you think of, like, just outside of the characters, like, you think of that windmill, and you think of it on fire to the point that Universal right now is creating this kind of contemporary Universal Monsters Land at their new amusement park. Right. And there's going to be a windmill there on top of one of the, like, restaurants they're going to have in the land that is going to light up in flames periodically. So
that's cool, man.
Isn't that cool? Yeah. So
it's very cool.
The fact that they're even, like, you have to, that has to be there. Like, just when it comes to images from these movies, the up in flame windmill is a must. So are there any dislikes in the movie? Do you have anything you disliked about this movie or something that could have been improved on or any lulls? I teased mine earlier.
I couldn't really think of too much. I do think that what's his name, Victor? I feel like he was kind of a strange thing to put in there. I mean, I get it, but at the same time, I don't really get it. I think it would have been cooler to see him killed off.
Yes, I agree.
Like, I think that would have been a better route for him to go, just to, like, add to the body count. But other than that,
I think they added him in because I agree. I think he's probably the most forgettable part about this movie. I think they added him in because they kind of wanted that Dracula dynamic. Like, a young, handsome guy outside of Henry. They want, like, this young, handsome dude, the love interest, the Van Helsing, which is, you know, Waldman. And then, like, the father character, which they have in this movie, which he kind of also comes and goes in the movie a lot. But, yeah, Victor, dude, whenever you think of this movie, I forget he exists.
Oh, yeah, same. Like, there's no reason for him to be there.
In 6 months, if you were to quiz me on this movie, I'd forget about the Victor character. And even, honestly, Elizabeth to an extent, but she's kind of the love interest and the damsel in distress, so it makes sense why she's in the movie. But Victor, yeah, man, he's kind of just there with, like, his pointy mustache and, like, Elizabeth, where's Henry? Like, he's just there. Like, it's I think they were just filling. There was like certain beats they needed to hit, and, like, the stud dude needed to be in it, because Henry, outside of being crazy and obsessed with his work, he is kind of, you know, he's not really a protagonist or an antagonist. He's just
floating around, macking on his wife.
In between. No, not even Vera. I'm talking about Henry. Henry's sort of like in between an antagonist and a protagonist because it's his fault this is all happening.
Yeah.
I guess Victor was there to kind of be like the good guy, male character. But in reality, he doesn't really do anything.
No, not really.
Yeah, it's...
And I guess now that you're talking about it, that's one thing I think is kind of odd, too, is that, like, they don't really give a shit that Henry created this thing. He doesn't get any, like... I mean, don't you think they should have held him at stake for the girl being killed or, like, any of this happening? They're just like, this dude's getting married. Yeah. Take him home. We'll take care of his fuck-up for him.
Yeah, they don't really... No one ever kind of reprimands him at all in the movie about it. Yeah. They're just kind of like, whatever, bro. You brought this killing machine to life that doesn't even realize it's murdering people. It is, I guess... I think that's just a product of the time as well. I don't think, like, exposition and, like, making long-form films... You know, film was still fairly... This is the early stages of, like, soundies and sound films. So I just think it was, like, that was too much detail... Like, I think if they made, obviously, if they, like, I bet Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein movie that's coming out next year is probably gonna be like 2.5 hours long. So you'll have every aspect of this story in it. So this is 1 hour and 10 minutes. You really can't, you know, have this giant monologue of someone yelling at him that what he did was terrible, you know?
Yep.
Waldman would probably be the character that would do that if they gave him a scene like that, you know? In reality, that's who it would have been. But yeah, Victor. Pointless character. If he was removed entirely, it wouldn't change the movie.
This movie still stands.
Yeah, it still would be good. But yeah, Grimey, closing thoughts on Frankenstein.
Like I said before, if you haven't seen it before, definitely watch it. It's one of the best ones out of this whole entire, as far as I could tell, out of all of the monster films, this is one of the biggest, one of the best, and it is my personal favorite. And if you can hold off, wait until Halloween, it just really complements the scene and the season in general. It's a great film.
Yeah, it's a must watch every October. I think you got to watch it. It's always number one on most people's list of Universal monsters for a reason, because of what it represents for that entire, I guess, Universal monsters. Even when you look at this VHS, dude, and you look at that symbol, who's in the center? Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Frankenstein is the boss. Even Dracula's a little behind him. He's like, damn, gotta take a step back. Frankenstein's important, man. It's important to the franchise. It's important to Universal Studios. It's important to Universal Monsters. And probably will go down as one of the best, and probably not even go down. It is, and I think there's no denying it, one of the best horror films, science fiction horror / films of all time. Everything about it is iconic, and I'm with you, Grimey. It's a safe bet to say this is one of, if not the best, Universal monster movies. It all goes downhill from here. I'm just kidding.
Get him to the cellar.
Shoot it. It's a monster.
So that was 1931's Frankenstein. Next up, we've got Murders in the Rue Morgue, a deep cut one, Grimey.
Ooh. This is. I've never even heard of this one, so I'm really, really excited to get into it.
Where can people find you and Leftover Pizza?
Me? Oh, you're so kind. You can find us on Instagram at Leftover Pizza Podcast if you're interested in that, or you can head over to the website at leftoverpizzaclub.com. I believe it is. Sorry if it's not. And other than that, you can listen on any streaming platform, podcast, wherever you get them. We're there. Should be.
And be sure to subscribe. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, at Haunted Hangover. Head over to hauntedhangover.com for links to everything, including our Patreon page, which features bonus spooky content. Rate and review us wherever you listen to this. And as always, remember, the best cure for a hangover is
more booze.
Catch you guys later.